Hey, this is Noah Levine, founder of Against the Stream, Refuge Recovery, and Dharma Punks. Thanks for tuning in to the podcast. I hope you're enjoying the Dharma. Together, may we create a positive change on this planet. If you feel moved to leave a donation, there's a link in the show notes. May our paths cross soon.
Okay, let's get started. Welcome, everybody. Anybody here for the first time tonight? Welcome to you. Welcome to you. Welcome back to everyone else. Welcome to anybody joining us online for the first time. I'm a bit sick. I was in bed all yesterday, most of today, and almost didn't make it. I actually texted Jason the last minute, see if he could sub for me, but I was already on my way when he got back to me. So I'm going to do it, but I might cut it a little short tonight. I have a little fever and I could wear my mask, but I'm just going to social distance from you so you can hear me. So maybe don't give me hugs afterwards. No high fives. Being sick is its own interesting mindfulness practice and mindfulness of how the ego self likes to manifest. And I think it's always interesting to look at our tendencies of how we feel about ourselves when we're sick, and how the kind of self-pity or the sort of leave me alone or take care of me or whatever, or a little bit of both, take care of me but leave me alone, kind of. I feel like I have a mixture of both sort of in my own process being sick. And I also have a bit of a I'm just gonna go anyways. I'm not gonna let this physical form stop me from showing up and doing what I am supposed to be doing and push through, macho, stoic, whatever tendency. On the Monday nights, I've been in a series of the four foundations of mindfulness. For the last several weeks, we've been on the fourth foundation of mindfulness. And one of the several lists, we've gone through the Four Noble Truths, we've gone through the five hindrances, we've gone through the seven factors of awakening, of enlightenment. And the list that I want, we've gone through the five skandhas, the five containers of being. And tonight the list is the five senses, or the six senses, the sense doors. Of mindfulness of seeing, mindfulness of hearing, mindfulness of smelling, tasting, of sensation, and of mental and emotional processes. I like to start class by asking you to talk to each other a little bit in service of building some community, getting to know each other, connecting. In the long run, it's such a central part of Buddhism to have community that you're connected with. So because it's all relational and it's all about fellowship, sangha, community. So I like to ask you to talk to each other. So I thought I'd use the topic of the sense doors, your senses. Think for a moment, rate your senses of your sort of favorite to least favorite. Think about what is your favorite? Do you prefer what you have? We all have some, is it seeing? Is it is that your favorite? I like to look. I'm a voyeur. I like to see things. Is it sound? Are you an audiophile? Really like the ambiance. I want to have the right soundtrack going. I want things to sound right all of the time. Smell, is smell an important sense door to you? Are you burning your, toxic, smelly candles that are killing you slowly? Are you burning your incense? Are you fresh flowers? Are you, is it taste? What's your relationship to, are you often eating gum and breath mints and making sure you have something pleasant on the tongue? And how much of it is physical sensation? So the hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting can kind of break down into, and then it's the rest of the body. All of the sensation, there's so much sensation that we experience in our hands and feet and arms and legs and sexual sensation and just the trunk of the body, the back of the body, the front of the body, so much To really classify it as just feeling is feels I don't know, like it's not big enough to encompass our whole sensation, you know, all physical sensation. And then so I think traditionally there's just the five senses, the five doors, sense doors of knowing, and then Buddhism adds the mind as the sixth sense. The mind is a door of perception, a way that we know, the way that we think. Our emotions are experienced in our minds, and physically. You know, there's a kind of the mind-body connection of that which arises in the mind has a reverberation in the physical form, somatically in the body. So what are your what's your preferences? This is just sort of something for you to talk about. And here's one thing that you can say, and think about it for a moment. If you had to lose one, which sense door do you feel like you have the least amount of attachment to, need for, as you think about living your life without smell, living your life without taste, living your life without sight or without sound? Or without sensation. There's that new movie that looks terrible about the Novocaine, the guy that doesn't have physical sensations and he goes around getting hurt and doesn't know it because he has no physical sensation. And he lives his life in this kind of place of, you know, getting injured and not even knowing it. No physical pain. Novocaine. I imagine he also doesn't experience pleasure. I don't know if there's some hack there. If you could just get rid of the pain and just only experience pleasure, most of you probably sign up for it. But you probably get lose both, I'd imagine. Or your mind. Would you be happy to have a lobotomy sometimes? Just fucking my mind. Get rid of it. If I could just get rid of my mind, creates almost all of my suffering, the comparing and the judging and the craving and the critical thoughts and all of that shit that the mind does. Would be a relief to just have a lobotomy. Just be a little bit of a zombie, a little Zen zombie. Which one would you trade in first? It's a fucked up question, right?
Yeah.
But interesting to make us think about our senses and how identified with them and necessary. And of course, we don't want to lose any of them. It's part of being, is having these six ways of knowing the world. It's how we know the world. It's how we relate to each other, how we relate to the world. So take 5 minutes and talk to each other briefly about your relationship to the sense doors, and at least kind of, you know, say, oh, I guess it would be smelling, tasting, seeing, whatever it is for you. At home, I will put you in the breakout rooms right now. In the room, just meet a couple people you don't know, talk to them. So I'll give some instructions in the meditation on bringing our attention to the different sense doors and being mindful of the present time experience of these sense doors that are always happening. And then afterwards, we'll have some teaching, some discussion about it. So, finding a way to sit that's upright, relaxed. Allowing the eyes to be gently closed, the body to release any unnecessary tension. Establishing an attitude of friendliness, kindness, self-acceptance. Present time awareness of the physical form sitting, mindfulness of the body, sensation, the sense door of feelings, sensations, physical manifestation. How's your body feel? What are you feeling in this moment? Can you feel the contact, the touch points with the chair, the cushion? Can you feel your skin, the clothing against your skin? The physical sensation created by the body breathing, the heart beating. All of these autonomic sensations that the body produces. In the beginning of a sitting like this, it can be useful to choose one sense door and focus the attention there. Often the instruction is to start with mindfulness of the breath. Traditionally, this is used as sensation practice, the sensations that the breath creates. But since we're exploring the sense doors, you could also explore the scent, the smell. As you breathe in and out, is there smell present? When your attention is drawn away from the breath, what sense door is calling it? Is it the thoughts? This sense door of thinking? Thoughts, emotions, plans, memories? Just another way that we know our experience, we know the world, internal and external, remembering, planning. Or perhaps the sound draws the attention away from the breath, sense door of hearing. A relaxed focus on the breath, not a tense concentration. Just the intention to be present with the sensations created by the breath. These are called sense doors, and we are greeting, we are receiving that which enters through the sense door. Think of it more as a receptive awareness, receiving smell and taste and sound. You don't have to lean out into it, just receiving. Consciously shift from the focus on the breath and smell to hearing. Let hearing be the focus. Connect with sounds arising and passing, the sound of my voice coming and going, traffic passing by, other sounds in the room. And see if you can tune in to the ringing in your ears, the high tone, present time, investigative awareness of the ringing. The body produces this metallic tone in the ears. With everything that we're paying attention to, we're observing, receiving, investigating the changing nature of sound, even that tone, vibrations changing, breath coming and going, sounds arising and passing. Shifting from the focus in hearing to seeing, what is your experience of images behind the closed eyelids? Is there light? Is there shape? Is there a sense of being able to locate the form of your body, even with the eyes closed? Present time awareness, mindfulness of this physical form, this body that we live in. All of the sensations, some pleasant, some unpleasant, some neutral. Constantly changing this physical form, subject to sickness, aging, and death. And these sense doors that we know the world through, sounds and smells and tastes, images. Some pleasant, some unpleasant, some neutral. The level of identification, the ways that we personalize what we see, what we hear, what we smell, what we taste. Often in the teachings, the Buddha refers to the sense doors as the sense doors of clinging. Where we cling, we crave, we get attached to pleasant sounds and smells and tastes. The mind, a sense door of craving, of clinging. Craving for life to be pleasant and not painful, easy and not difficult. receiving what's happening moment to moment at all of the doors of perception, ways of knowing, sense doors, and allowing it. Not resisting the sounds, the smells, the tastes, the sensations, even the discomfort of sitting still, receiving and allowing as much as you can in this moment. We learn to be friendly and compassionate towards the unpleasant rather than resistant, rather than battling, rather than trying to control. We learn through mindfulness to let go, allow the impermanent nature to be as the pleasant arises and sustains and passes. For the last couple of minutes, try to practice. Bear attention where you experience what's happening as though you had no name for it. All of the labels that we put on our experience being based in conditioned memory. What's the direct experience of sound, of sensation? With that, opening your eyes, exploring this sound from the beginning to end. And when you're ready, allowing your eyes to be open and your attention to be in seeing and moving. Although this specific list comes in the fourth aspect of mindfulness, I think I'm generally guilty of directing in the meditation instructions towards some exploration of the sense doors in the first foundation of mindfulness. And I'm never quite sure what, I mean, it feels like these sense doors are the body. And the first foundation is the body. And the Buddha, you know, gives some instructions about the body in the first foundation, mostly physical sensations and breath awareness, but then says, hey, when it comes to sound and smell and sight, taste, he leaves that to the fourth foundation. Or anyways, that's how it was recorded. But it very, very much feels kind of connected with the first foundation. Embodied awareness isn't just physical sensation. It's also, what are you seeing? What are you hearing? What are you smelling? What are you tasting? What's your mind up to? Obviously, third and fourth foundation mindfulness. And, you know, the noble truths, the second noble truth of the Buddha, of Buddhism, is that all of the, you know, that we live in this process of repetitive craving. And where do we experience that craving? We experience a lot of that repetitive craving in our minds, right? Notice how your mind is always sort of wanting it to be a little different than it is. But also, and maybe not quite as consciously, and this is part of the practice, also your eyes are craving for pleasant sights. It's not just in the mind. It's the kind of, maybe it's the mind craving for pleasant sights, for pleasant smells, for pleasant tastes. And there's several places in the teachings where the Buddha says, you know, this is our practice, not just eyes closed, sitting still meditation, although that's a central part. It's also walking around with how we interact with the senses in the world. After giving the, you know, the Buddha came to his awakening, saw through the impermanent, impersonal, unsatisfactory nature of things, learned to meet all of the pain with compassion, all of the pleasure with non-attached appreciation, learned to meet the mind with a non-identification, no longer identified with the ego self, I, me, mine, saw through that. And first he gave the four, he formulated it into the Four Noble Truths, and he found some friends of his that he'd been practicing asceticism with, and gave them the truth of suffering, the cause of suffering, the possibility of ending suffering, the Eightfold Path to ending suffering. The Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path. And one of the next, right around after that, after he converted his friends and they're like, okay, we're in, teach us mindfulness, we're going to do this, let's walk this middle path together. They came into contact with a group of fire worshippers that were in the same area around Varanasi, Saranath, northern India. And fire worshippers are probably, you know, some sort of Hindu, Vedic cult of worshipping impermanence. Fire is this form of impermanence. It's the symbol of Shiva in Indian. It's the sort of like the destruction impermanence, and they worshipped the reality of impermanence. Connected, I mean, so is the Buddha. The Buddha's central teaching, impermanence. But they're doing this with a little bit more of an external, building bonfires, worshiping the fire, meditating on the flames, and kind of getting concentrated and meditating on their fire worshippers. And they were dreadlocked ascetics. And I, you know, I don't know if you've seen, you know, pictures of sadhus in India, but especially the Shivite sect of the sadhus, they're big weed smokers. And I don't know if they were 2,600 years ago, but somehow they're kind of like Indian Rastas. Their meditation is like smoke weed all day and, you know, dance around the bonfire and do different kind of ascetic practices. Huh?
Burners.
They're burners. They're Burning Man people.
Yeah.
So the Buddha comes in contact with them, and there's a large group, hundreds of them. It's this big, big spiritual community of fire worshipers. And he gives a talk, and the reason I was thinking about this, because it's one of the places where the teaching that he gives to them is about the sense doors. He says, look, you're worshiping the fire, this external form of fire, but if you practice mindfulness, you will see that actually your tongue is on fire with craving for pleasure, with aversion to pain, with self-centeredness, with the cause of your suffering is right here in your mouth. And mindfulness of sound, your ears are on fire. He said, you don't need to look at the fire. Look inward. Look at the way that the eye is on fire, that the ear is on fire, that the tongue is on fire, that the nose is on fire, that our whole body and mind are burning with craving and aversion and self-centeredness. And the practice is not to continue stoking these fires or worshiping them, but to extinguish. That through mindfulness, we can see the craving, the clinging, the self-centeredness that self creates itself in this human form, and we can begin to extinguish it with wisdom. Wisdom is the fire extinguisher. Ignorance continues to burn it all down. Ignorance chases pleasure. Ignorance runs from pain. Ignorance takes everything personal. Wisdom is soothing. Wisdom that gets uncovered, that gets developed, that gets accessed through meditation, extinguishes the identification with, I need everything to be pleasant around me. Everything has to be beautiful. Everything needs to smell good. I can't tolerate unpleasant smells. For some years, I was doing a gig where I was teaching meditation at these big yoga festivals, with like sometimes thousands of people at these big yoga festivals, and I was like the token meditation teacher, and we were doing some big yoga things. And I used to love to go out there, and all of the yogis who are like kind of, not all of them, but some of them, kind of chasing bliss, looking for pleasure, trying to, really create these altered states in the kind of feel-good yoga world. And I used to love to go and be like, okay, here we are, and the highest spiritual practice that you can do today is in the porta potty. It's like going in there and being non-reactive to the unpleasant smells of the porta potties at these festivals. And that's actually the sign of spiritual maturity. Not how good you are at touching your toes, but how good you are at being non-reactive to unpleasantness and not addicted to, I can only be happy when I'm comfortable and when it smells good, rather than can I walk into the porta potty with equanimity? That's the test. That's how spiritual you are. Can you walk into the porta potty when it's 100 degrees and 500 yoga people have already pooped before you? Can you walk in there and be with the unpleasant? And like, what a wake-up call of like, oh, nope, I can't, because my nose is on fire, is burning with aversion, is burning with craving, is identified with, I'm only happy when it's pleasant. I'm not good at being in the unpleasant. And, at the time, not that we need to become, I feel like sometimes when I start going off in this way, it almost sounds like Buddhism's a little masochistic, or like we're seeking unpleasantness, but it really isn't. It's all just preparation for the unavoidable unpleasantness. Just get good at it so that when it's unavoidable, you can do it. You're not addicted to needing to be comfortable all the time. You're not addicted to needing it to be smell good all of the time. That you can tolerate the unpleasant. You can meet it with compassion. You can accept it. So that fire sermon is an interesting one to reflect on, and to reflect on your own relationship to sights and smells and tastes and sensations. And that we just live in this biological imperative to avoid pain. Not your fault. Even saying it's on fire, it sounds a little judgy on some level, like you're burning. And it's like, no, it's just the human condition is one of craving. It's not your fault. It's not a sin. It's not a shortcoming. It's not a defect of character. It's not any of that shit. It's just millions of years of biological evolutionary body that just craves pleasure. It's not personal, but we take it personal and we suffer about it. And the Buddha has an intervention. Here's a way not to take it so personal, not to suffer about it. Mindfulness of the sense doors and their tendency towards clinging and aversion and I, me, mine. The other teaching, and I'm going to cut it a little bit short tonight, that came to mind for these sense doors is the fire sermon and then Bahia of the bark cloth. So that was really early in the Buddha's teaching career. He gave the fire sermon. It's one of the initial big teachings. And by the way, they all converted to Buddhism and they all left their fire worshiping stoner ways and became mindfulness Buddhist practitioners. And, you know, it was like the first, you know, it was the first, interesting, like the majority of the first converts to Buddhism were stoners. Big surprise. I don't know. And they all kind of got into recovery. It became this sort of like recovering kind of practice, sangha. Later, I don't know how long, but I feel like it's much later in the Buddha's life. There's a story about him. And there's a story about this guy named Bahia of the bark cloth. And bark cloth means that he's a renunciate and he doesn't wear any woven material. He only wears the bark from trees. And like kind of has a bark cloth skirt that he cruises around in. Think of like a, you know, like a hula skirt or something, I don't know. Grass skirt, bark cloth skirt. And he thinks that he's close to enlightenment, but he's not sure. And he hears that the Buddha's fully enlightened. So he seeks out the Buddha and he feels like there's this big urgency. For some reason, he has this premonition and this intuition that like, I don't know how much longer I'm going to live. I need to find the Buddha and see if I'm, you know, enlightened or not. And so he finds the Buddha, but he finds the Buddha at like noon. And the Buddha's on his alms round. And it's one of his rules that he can only eat. It's one of the Buddhist, Theravadan Buddhist traditional rules that you can only eat before midday. And that once it's like past noon or 1 o'clock or whatever it is, midday, then you can't eat anything else. So you go in the morning and you get your food for the day. You have one big meal and then that's it, no more food. And so the Buddha's on his alms round. And Bahia finds him and he says, oh, you know, blessed Buddha, like, please, can I have some of your time? I need to get some teachings. It's very urgent. And the Buddha says, not now, Bahia, I'm on alms round. But if you come back this afternoon, I'll be happy to chat with you. And Bahia says, no, this is so urgent. I need you to give me teachings right now, just something brief. You know, who knows what's going to happen? Like, it just feels urgent. And Buddha a second time says, dude, fucking trying to get some lunch over here. Give me, you know, like this afternoon. And Bahia continues to pester the Buddha. Oh, no, like it feels, please, sir, please, Master Buddha, please. And then, you know, there's that sort of like, I don't know, archetype of like, if you ask the Buddha three times, he can't say no. And so like the third time he asks the Buddha's okay. He says, okay, I'll give you all of the teachings, everything you need to know, I'll give you in kind of six short, brief teachings. He says, are you listening, Bahia? Bahia says, yes, I'm ready, master. He says, in the seeing, there is only the seen. In the hearing, there is only the heard. In the smelling, there is only that which is smelled. In the tasting, there is only that which is tasted. In the thoughts and the emotions and the, he might actually say there's seeing and what is seen, and there's hearing and what is here, there's smelling and what is smelled. And he kind of just goes through the sense doors, but he uses this simple, like, it's just that simple. There's no smeller. There's no taster. There's no thinker. There's no feeler. There's just seeing and what is seen. There's just smelling and what is smelled. And Bahia says, I got it. Okay, great. Thank you. I'm an arahant. I'm a liberated being. Just this simple sense door, not self teaching. And the Buddha goes on his way to get lunch. And then out of nowhere, a wild rogue cow comes and tramples Bahia to death. And he knew he had that urgency of, I better get this fucking teaching because I could die at any minute. And he was right. He got the teaching and then he died. The mind creates a self around what we see. And notice how, like, in the end of the meditation, I said, try to do bare attention, like, if you didn't consult your memory. You know how, like, the when you hear a sound of the traffic or something when you're meditating, your mind just instantly labels it as car, traffic. But it's all, that's not the direct experience. The direct experience is just hearing. And then the mind remembers that's a sound and that's what that sound is called. It labels it based on a concept of what's called in the language that you think in. But the direct experience is just hearing. There's no car, it's just sound. Likewise with sensation, likewise with taste, with smell, with even, you know, so much of our thoughts are, it's all conditioned based on the programming, the learning, the knowledge that we've put in here. And then it's just playing itself out, but it's just thoughts arising and passing. Plans, memories, coming and going, the impermanent nature of arising, sustaining, and passing phenomena. Just seeing and what is seen. And practice with this. Just try to this week. Trip out on it a little bit. What if you take out the identification with I am seeing and just be like seeing and what is seeing? Hearing. The body is hearing. The nose is smelling, the tongue is tasting. The body's feeling sensation. And just try to be with the direct experience rather than I am uncomfortable. I am hungry. I hate the smell of this porta potty. Just smell, just taste. Trying to strip it down to the direct experience. The bare attention of the direct experience. I'll take a couple of questions and then we'll end early if there's any questions. Jason, go ahead.
What did the Buddha say to Bahia? Was it the mind and what is perceived?
Yeah. Thoughts and, yeah, maybe mind and what is perceived. I'm not sure exactly, but right. Thoughts and what is thunk? Yeah, mind and what is, what arises and passes. The mind, you know, just the thoughts without, I feel like it's a little bit where Epstein got that, thoughts without a thinker. And that's a very, you know, there's a Buddhist psychologist, Mark Epstein, that wrote a book a long time ago, 25, 30 years ago, called Thoughts Without a Thinker, and looking at how the mind just thinks. Try to find the thinker in your meditation. And it's part of what the Buddha is saying here to Bahia. There's thoughts, there's no thinker, there's just thoughts. The mind just thinks all by itself. It's not personal, it's not self. It's just like the lungs breathe all by themselves, the heart beats all by itself, the mind thinks. But we take it all so fucking personally as my emotions, my thoughts, my feelings, my plans, my memories. And, you know, on the relative level, some of it's kind of personal. You want to take some personal responsibility for it. But ultimately, not so much. Clinging. The sense doors of clinging. Clinging causes suffering. Non-clinging ends suffering. The sense doors cling all by themselves. Mindfulness is the intervention that we're trying to do to be less attached, less identified, and less suffering about it. I'm happy to leave it there. I need to get back to bed. My sense doors are clinging. Good to see everybody. Sorry for the short class tonight. I'll be here next week. I'll be here for the next few weeks. A few announcements. Joshua Tree 5-night silent retreat open for registration May 13th through 18th. You're all welcome to come. There's some scholarship possibilities. There's partial scholarship. We will also fully scholarship some people. If you apply for that, you have to send us an email, ask for it. But starting to get filled up if you're going to come get your reserve your spot. And then the next big trip is November 10th through 24th. We're going to Sri Lanka. I'm taking, I don't know, 25 or 30 people to Sri Lanka this year. 2 years ago, we did a group to Thailand. Last year, India. This year, Sri Lanka. Next year, I'm thinking we'll go back to Thailand with maybe a Cambodia, Angkor Wat. I'm already thinking about that's my sense door of craving for travel adventure. But I'm thinking maybe Angkor Wat, Cambodia, and Northern Thailand next in 26. But this year, Sri Lanka, you're all invited. You can afford it and you have the time and energy and can tolerate living with 30 people for 2 weeks. In some beach time and some jungle time and some silent retreat time and some wandering through ruins time, it'll all be a you know, kind of spiritual mindfulness practice. And some of it will be some tourism and some of it will be some silent retreat. And some of it will be hanging on the beach and seeing the turtles and the elephant sanctuaries and shit like that that we're going to do as well. So that's also open for registration. Did I forget anything, Sebastian?
The vision purchase before May 1st.
Yeah, if you're planning to come to Sri Lanka, there's an early registration discount. You save a few hundred bucks if you register before within the next month, and then after that it goes up a little bit. So plan and register and save a few bucks if you're coming. Class is done by donation. Please be generous. This organization has been in existence here in Los Angeles for over 20 years based on the generosity that you as the participants have supported it. I've been teaching this Monday night class for over 20 years now. And the only reason it's here is because people donate to keep it here. And so if you want to keep it here, keep donating. Thank you for your generosity. And I'll keep coming back if you keep helping me pay the rent. So we'll leave it there for tonight. May any goodness that comes from our practice be shared outward in all directions with all beings. May each one of us get as free as possible. And together may we create a positive change on this planet.
Thanks for tuning in to the podcast. This is Noah Levine, founder of Against the Stream and Refuge Recovery. If you feel moved to leave a donation, there's a link in the show notes.